and on her talent the gym's prospects rode. "The rising tide lifts all boats," Gwen once told Eric. "And I just hope Teddy's not a sinker." No one ever said anything directly to Katie, only to Eric. Occasionally, she'd wonder if Eric had doubts, too. But she always reminded herself that he loved Teddy, and most of all, Devon did. "Mom," she'd once said to her, "thank you for finding him for me." She'd thought, but didn't say, "Honey, he'd have found you anywhere." "I have no doubt about Devon," Gwen was saying. "My doubts are with Teddy's attentions right now. They need to be on Bellstars, not on his hysterical niece and her doomed romances." "Hey," Katie said, looking around at them. "We all owe Teddy a lot. You want someone like John Ellers, who says gymnasts are like scorpions in a jar, the one who crawls out is the winner? You think he's going to care about your girls like Teddy does?" There were a few half-hearted nods, though Gwen's eyes wandered back to the laptop screen. Lacey squeezed her sneaker toes anxiously. "Katie, I know you love Teddy," Kirsten said, removing her Bluetooth and leaning forward in the squeaking chair. "Because he has done nothing but shower your daughter with attention since the moment she landed at his doorstep. But your darling Coach T was at the police station with Haley for 4 hours today, and we need to get real." Katie looked at Eric as he watched it all. "Say something," she thought. "You want a gym exodus? That may be fine for you," Katie said. "But I don't feel ready to make any big decisions for Devon."
"That's because you don't have to," Kirsten said icily. "Because your daughter's a star."
There was a long beat, Kirsten glaring, her Bluetooth crackling in her palm. "Hey, everyone," Katie said, rising. Someone needed to say something, and Eric stood there silently, almost as if he were one of them. Katie cleared her throat. "Let's step back a second and remember a few things. Molly, how about the time he missed his own 50th birthday party to visit Cheyenne at St. Joe's after she dislocated her knee playing soccer? Or when he drove 70 miles on black ice to get Nikki Hargrove home from regionals before her PSATs?" She turned to each of them, softening her eyes as Eric always did. "And Kirsten, before state last year when Jordan couldn't find her good luck grips, Teddy spent 2 hours looking before he found them at the bottom of the pit, under that mouse nest."
"Thigh deep in the pit," Molly said with a small grin, "holding up those stinky grips, saying, 'Nothing I won't do for my girls, our girls.'"
Katie could feel Eric watching her so closely, so intently it almost hurt. It felt like a heat on her. "And Gwen," Katie said, taking a few steps toward her, the screensaver on her laptop spattering blood, sweat, and chalk. "Lacey's last coach, the one at that fancy gym we lured you from, he told you Lacey would never make it to level 8 with her confidence issues.
Teddy saw her potential."
Katie looked over at Lacey, who was staring fixedly at the bug zapper above.
"He did," Gwen said. "But that's not helping any of us now. And no offense, Katie, but you're not even a booster officer."
There was an anxious silence, and Katie looked over at Eric, filling her face with urgency.
"For God's sake, Kirsten, your daughter isn't even a level 10 yet. She—"
Katie began. But Eric stepped forward, grabbing for Katie's wrist, pulling her toward him and then behind him.
"Can I say something?" he said, leaning against the edge of the tilting patio table. "Katie's right. We need to slow down. Teddy's concentrating on his family right now, which is what any of us would do. And a big disruption, so close to qualifiers, the upheaval of changing gyms and coaches, is that good for our girls? Is that what they need?"
All their eyes had turned to him, their faces filling with expectation. It was such a power, one she could never match. Even more good-looking as the years skipped by, his features settling on himself, the hot gaze of booster moms and dads transforming him. He was always able to convey the feeling that he believed firmly in all the right things, and in ways magical and obscure, the way he looked seemed to confirm it.
"So instead of talking exodus," he continued, hooking his fingers around Katie's wrist. I think if we all pause here on this moment, we'll remember we owe him more than poaching plans and knee-jerk second-guessing. We should be doing for him what he's done for us. Hold steady through the storm, steer with confidence, and be there for him, because we're lucky to have him.
There was a brief pause, and then Molly and Jim nodded firmly, rising, and Jim shook Eric's hand.
You're here, my friend.
Kirsten sighed and tucked her Bluetooth back in her ear, its light pulsing jauntily. Gwen slid her tablet back into her purse.
Eric?
Molly said, voice shaking, moving closer to him.
Really? So much of that is you? We are so lucky to have you.
Katie watched as Molly walked over and pressed her soft bones and, as ever, her quivering breasts against Eric's chest. As she nestled against him, Eric turned slightly, and that was when Katie saw the look on his face, a look only she would understand. It was the same one he always wore right before Devon attempted a terrifying stunt for the very first time, a look of acute trepidation, even a hauntedness, as if he held a private knowledge that this wasn't going to end quickly or cleanly. That all the foam pits and pizza parties and booster brawn and stalwart can-do spirit in the world weren't going to count alongside the dark matter of Ash Road. And maybe that's what the tightness in his voice earlier had been about when he spoke about Haley. Maybe that's what everything with him these last few days had been about. The desperation to try against all the epic forces at work in the world, to hold everything together. For Devon. That night, Katie couldn't remember him coming to bed at all. At one point she thought she saw him, felt him, but it was just a shadow, a passing car, a trick of the light. Chapter 11.
How does it work?
Drew whispered as Katie shook the chloroseptic and sprayed it down his meaty throat. I don't know, honey, it just numbs you.
Where's Dad?
He had to work.
It's Saturday.
It is. Eric rarely missed Devon's weekend practices, but he'd fallen behind with everything. That's what his text said.
Need to catch up at studio after dropping off D.
I hope I'm okay soon,
Drew said, his voice thick and funny from the spray.
Can I go check the shrimp?
What? Katie said. Her eyes drifted to her laptop. The Bellstar's Facebook page. Someone had posted an old photo there. Ryan, his face breaking into a grin, alongside Haley in cutoffs and a Bellstar's t-shirt in front of that purple car of hers. Maiden Pond, shimmering in the background. She wondered if it had been posted in memory of Ryan or to remind everyone of Haley's purple car. The car in question. In the photo, it didn't look nearly as vibrant, as grape-crushed delicious. Instead, it looked muddy, mysterious. And Haley, her freckles blurry, her hair wind-stirred, her side smile, looked mysterious too. Obscurely primitive. The way she was holding on to Ryan so tightly, her neck cords visible, her painted fingers like purpled claws.
You make me crazy, baby. You make me crazy.
That's what Katie had overheard her saying to Ryan that time at the Ramada Sundries shop. Moments before, she'd lunged up behind Ryan as he talked to Katie, her arms bolting around him.
He's mine.
Or maybe it was Haley's phone call still hammering in Katie's head. But the picture, it looked like evidence for something. 2 hours before practice normally ended, the text came.
Mom, no Coach T again. Short practice. Dad not texting back. Can you get me?
You sure you're up to the drive, sweetie?
Katie asked as they walked into the garage.
Yeah,
Drew said, peering down at his 2-liter bottle, thick with scum. The science project, of course.
It smells funny in here.
You mean like old shrimp?
No.
A jackknifed truck held her hostage on Route 11 for an extra 20 minutes, and by the time she pulled into the Bellstar's parking lot, gymnasts were already streaming out of the building in their matching warm-up suits, matching hollow-chested postures,
matching stoic expressions, their mouths all straight lines. But no Devon. Looking in the rearview mirror at Drew's wan face, mouth open and lips coated white, she didn't want to leave the car. But Devon wasn't answering her phone, and Katie had the sneaking sense she was still at the vault, making use of every spare minute, feeling her progress whittled away by circumstance and tumult.
I just get lost up there.
That's what she'd told Amelise.
Drew, I'll be right back,
she said, leaning into the rear seat, resting the back of her hand on his forehead for the 100th time. Jogging inside the Bellstar's lobby, the familiar bite of Sterifab and Tenactin, she kept her head down, avoiding eye contact with the stray parent or staff member. As she pushed through the heavy doors into the gym, she saw only a few assistant coaches, a handful of girls in leotards over at the resi pit, one girl still practicing handstand pops on the tumbling track, Bobby catching her legs.
Where's Devon?
Katie, she was looking for you,
Bobby said, the girl's ankles caught in his hands, her upturned face blooming with blood.
But that was a while ago.
I saw her in the locker room, Missy Morgan said, zipping her gym bag. But I think she's gone now.
Wending her way past the practice beams and uneven bars, Katie started to pick up her pace, some feeling in her chest. Approaching the locker room, eyes fixed on the long line of red cubbies leaning through the door's cutout window, she heard the scream, like a tear in the throat.
Stop it! Stop it!
Heart pommeling against her chest, Katie charged through the double doors. At first she couldn't see anything, just heard a tight shriek, a hard clang.
Devon?
Katie cried out, running past the locker stalls, her chest lurching. Everything was a red blur until she saw them. Two girls, interlocked on the floor, almost like an embrace. Katie could see only the tall one on top, golden hair sprayed across the back of the red Bellstar's hoodie, and beneath her a pair of tanned legs, scrambling, sneakers squeaking on the tiles.
Help!
Came a strangled voice as Katie forked her arm under the torso of the hoodie girl and lifted with all her might, which seemed infinite. Wrenching the girl by her hood, barring the tanned expanse of her broad shoulders, Katie hurled her aside, somehow stronger than ever in her life, and found beneath the bloodless face of her daughter.
Devon!
Katie cried. Sprawled on the floor, her daughter still grasped the girl's hoodie cord so tightly it had cut into the center of her palms. Blood whirled.
I'll kill you!
The hoodie girl screamed, and Katie's head whipped around to see who she was, though she already knew. The freckled nose and bright teeth, that corn-colored hair rippling.
Haley!
Katie panted, her arms wrapping around Devon, shielding her hunched body.
Oh, God, Haley!
Call the police! Call the police! Someone was shouting as the doors to the locker room swung open behind them. There was a swirl of noise and doors and shouts, Bobby and Amelise descending upon them, propelling Haley backward, legs kicking, punching air, and the crash and rattle of locker metal, and the skidding of sneakers, and the savage howl of a girl who barely sounded human.
Her face, Katie thought. Her face? Who is that?
Teeth bared, veins rising everywhere, a face swollen with blood. In an instant, turning her body, Devon lifted her muscled leg and pounded with a force like the force she marshaled to punch the springboard, her foot landing on something with a deafening crunch. The stray bits of a lavender cell phone scattered across the floor like confetti. Haley let out one last howl.
I call 911,
came a shout from the hallway. Huddling over Devon, Katie looked up at Haley, who stood panting wildly, a thick strand of her own hair caught in her mouth, her neck scored with it, nail marks. Held back by Bobby's trunk arms, Haley breathed in, bent her head, and let loose a warm spray of pink saliva that scattered across Devon's chest, onto Katie's calf and ankle.
Bitch! I know you!
Haley muttered, Bobby pinning her arms back fiercely.
I know you!
Devon, eyes sheeted black, her expression as stony, as pitiless as Katie had ever seen, looked up at her and said nothing. Katie's hands clutched the wheel tightly, even though the car was not running. Bobby had tried to get her to wait in Teddy's office until the police arrived.
If we don't handle this right, he'd warned, there could be trouble. People trust their children with us.
But she needed to get Devin out of there, and Drew was alone in the car. Now all three of them sat, fogging the windows, and there were too many things to do all at once, and Eric's phone went straight to voicemail.
What happened? Drew asked. Did Devin fall?
Her head felt like it was whirring, her hand shaking. Devin was leaning forward in the front seat, hands pressed on the dashboard as if she might fall. Devin, look at me, she said. But Devin wouldn't, and wouldn't, until Katie finally reached across and pulled her sharp shoulder back. She supposed she'd imagined it would be worse, but other than Devin's chin, scored with red half-moons, her daughter looked remarkably intact. Except, was that a strand of Haley's hair caught in the corner of Devin's mouth? Like corn silk? We may need to go to the hospital, Katie said, reaching out for Devin's chin. Flinching, Devin pulled back, covering her chin with her hand. A police car turned into the lot. Stay here, Katie said. Do not move.
You can meet us at the station,
said the officer with the shaved head and soft lower lip.
We'll get some other statements here first.
His nameplate said Officer Crandall, and his severe effect was oddly comforting. Shaking his head as he took notes, he wouldn't let her back in the locker room. The sounds coming from there, piercing girl squeals echoing, reminded Katie of the time they'd found the dead raccoon trapped in the gym air shaft. Back in the car, Devin was still pitched forward, her eyes shut. On the tan dashboard, there was a red palm print like a kindergarten art project, the palm that had been wrapped around Haley's hoodie cord.
Mom, Drew said when she opened the door, Devin didn't cry once.
It's what he always said when his sister got injured, and it was very dear. Katie tried to smile for him, but caught a glimpse of herself in the rearview mirror. Her face and neck smeared pink with adrenaline, sweat-smudged hair, mascara striped across the bridge of her nose.
I think Dad called, Devin said, eyes still closed.
Katie looked down at her phone, blinking rapidly. When she called him back, he said he was already on his way to the police station. Bobby had phoned, he said. Bobby had told him.
How is she?
He asked, breath ragged. How's her wrist?
Her wrist? She's okay, she...
God damn it, I told you we needed to keep her away from Haley.
What?
She said. This is my fault?
I shouldn't have left her there. That gym isn't safe. Can you put her on the phone?
The back doors of the gym opened.
We have to go,
Katie snapped, turning the phone off and tossing it onto the console with a hard crack. She'd never hung up on Eric in her life. The three of them watched silently as the officer escorted Haley, hair sprigged like Medusa, in plastic cuffs, to the squad car. Once at a booster-sponsored volleyball game, Haley had worn a bikini, and Katie could swear she had the tan, poreless skin of a slick Barbie doll. Not a stray blemish, not one broken blood vessel, not a single scar. A perfect, markless body. And here she was, face ruddy, eyes lowered, angry scarlet grooves swooping up her face and neck. Officer Crandall's hand behind that honeyed head, ducking her into the back seat. She imagined Haley at 13, hitching her way down to Florida, ripped shirt, clawed face, fighting with another girl, beating her with a sandal.
What took you so long?
Mom,
Drew said.
What happened to your arm?
Katie looked down and saw the long, looping fishhook of a scratch extending from her elbow to her wrist.
And your eye!
Pulling her hair back, peering in the rearview mirror, she saw the knot of blood under her eyebrow and couldn't remember how she'd gotten it. A tigress, protecting her young. At the police station, Katie watched as Eric's hand clenched the water bottle so tightly it cracked, leaking all over his jeans, into his pocket, blurring all the print on the speeding ticket stuffed there. The one that Officer Crandall had said he'd
take care of,
given everything. She put her hand on his leg firmly. The desk sergeant sat with Drew on the other side of the windowed room. Katie watched Drew's mouth moving, imagining him talking and talking in that funny little frog voice. Inside, for the next half hour, Devin told Officer Crandall what had been happening with Haley and what had happened that day. It was hard to get her to say everything, and Katie had to prompt her several times.
Haley called me once, Katie said. But she's been calling Devin constantly. Tell him, Devin.
She kept calling,
she said so quietly they all leaned forward.
I don't know.
But you never spoke to her,
Officer Crandall asked.
Did she ever directly threaten you?
No, Katie said, looking at Devin, who was staring at her sore hand.
She did,
Devin said. What? Katie said. When?
She was sending me texts. I kept deleting them. They were creepy. Dad told me to block her.
Katie and Officer Crandall turned to Eric.
Because of the calling,
Eric said, straightening in his chair, looking at them both.
I told her to block her because of the incessant calling. I didn't know about the texts.
Devin, why didn't you tell me about the texts? Katie asked, her head throbbing. Officer Crandall looked at Katie, then back at Devin, who was still staring at her right hand, the ailing wrist bandaged now like a fat paw.
I don't know,
she said finally.
What did the text say?
Devin shrugged.
She kept calling me names. I don't know why.
The officer looked at her as if waiting for more.
Are we going to talk about what happened today?
Eric said, squirming in his chair.
You have no idea why she might have targeted you?
Crandall asked. There was another brief silence.
Sometimes, Katie jumped in, Devin's talents make her a target. There's jealousy, you know? A lot of it.
Devin nodded, staring at her hands.
Haley wanted to be a gymnast, she said. But she was too big.
That's true, Katie said, except it didn't seem precisely right. The way she'd always understood it, Haley had abandoned serious competition back in high school for swimming, and then coaching.
Can't you get those texts from Haley's phone? We'd need a warrant, he said. And we'd have to go through her provider since her phone was in about 25 pieces on the locker room floor.
Katie remembered the sound of splintering, the skittering of plastic on linoleum, Devin's foot landing on it like a tomahawk, Haley's banshee howl.
Why do we keep talking about texts?
Eric said, face florid in a way Katie didn't recognize.
This woman attacked my daughter. Or your provider,
the officer told Katie calmly.
Because deleting texts from your phone doesn't get rid of them. It just removes them from your phone.
As he spoke, the officer watched Devin, who was still fixated on her wrist, stretching the grip muscles like Teddy always told her to.
Officer, what do we do? Katie asked.
We have no idea what Haley's capable of.
We know exactly what she's capable of, Eric said. We saw it today. And I can't be the only one wondering what this has to do with Ryan Beck.
A loud crack and the battered water bottle in Eric's fist completely gave way this time, a sluice of water scattering across all of them. Katie jumped back, but neither Crandall nor Devin moved. Devin's eyes blinking as if water had been caught there, her lashes sticky with it.
Mr. Knox,
Crandall said, looking down at the water spatters on the desk.
Let's just keep focused on what happened to Devin. Okay? Then tell me this. How do we file a restraining order?
Eric said, picking up the splintered water bottle, nearly slamming it into the trash can.
She's locked up now, right?
Katie asked the officer, placing her hand on Eric's arm, pressing hard.
Miss Belfour is at St. Joe's,
Crandall said,
but we'll be talking to her very soon.
She's at the hospital? Katie asked.
Her injuries were more substantial than your daughter's,
Crandall added.
Oh.
A big hank of her hair got torn out, he said. Your daughter knows how to protect herself.
Katie looked at Devin, whose eyes remained downcast.
And her scalp opened up where she hit the floor,
Crandall continued.
But mostly they need to be extra careful whenever there's bite marks, especially under the eye.
He paused a second before adding,
It was a mean fight.
They found Drew half asleep in his chair, mouth still ringed white and a fresh red rash swarming up his face.
Come on, honey, Katie said, arms around him. Devin's in the restroom and then we'll go.
She felt Eric's hand on her arm.
Did you know she was violent? He said. Did you know any of this?
Katie stared at him, the way his hands bulbed into fists. He was looking at her like she had done something, like she was the one.
You knew as much as I did, she said, trying to keep her voice calm.
You're the one who said practice is how Devin works through feelings, right? He looked at her, then down at Drew, the back of his hand touching Drew's bloomy face.
We shouldn't have let Devin out of our sight after that call, he said. That's all I meant. Sorry. Sorry.
She nodded and stared at the ladies' room door waiting for Devin. That's when it came to her. The last time she'd talked to a police detective more than a dozen years ago. They were huddled in the hectic waiting room at Good Samaritan Hospital, Eric's forearms streaked with 3-year-old Devin's browning blood. The same blood that spattered across his t-shirt like scatter art, and the officer assuring them it was only routine after any severe injury of a child. The dropped ceiling so low, the strip fluorescence hurting her eyes, Katie had sat there, feeling like her insides had been scraped clean, like her mom once told her an abortion felt. Which is why, she'd added, I put you on the pill at 15.
The woman kept asking them questions.
Mr. Knox, was it common for you to have your daughter with you while you mowed the lawn? Mr. Knox, were you aware of the safety mechanisms on your mower? Eric, all of 22 years old, younger even than Ryan Beck, just stood there, grass blades still slashed up his calves. No belt, he'd torn it from its loops, tying it around Devin's foot. He stood there, unable to say anything but,
No, I don't know.
Your daughter may not even remember this later. The officer told them, walking them out. She may not even remember her foot ever being like it was before. But Katie knew that was a lie. The moment her own knees slid onto the shorn lawn, slick with Devin's blood, she knew her daughter would remember this forever.
How did I do that?
Eric kept asking her, his voice strange and high, like she'd never heard before and hadn't since.
How did I do that?
The paramedics and Mr. Watts from next door trying to help. To distract Devin, mashed against the grass, face white as paper.
Honey, look at me. Listen to me.
Mr. Watts from next door, trying to get her to look at him and not the red tangle hanging from her ankle.
Do you have a dog? Did you get an ice cream from the truck today?
But glassy-eyed Devin would only look at Katie, her red specked chin.
Mommy, where did it go?
Her foot stretched out in front of her, the bright mass below her ankle like a tissue paper flower.
Where did it go?
She wondered if Eric was thinking about any of this now. Looking at him, she had no idea, and would never ask.
We'll be in touch,
Officer Crandall said, then added, turning to Eric.
And we can talk more about that restraining order.
Her bandaged hand resting on top of her other one, Devin walked toward them from the restroom. So tiny, half a foot shorter than Katie herself.
Dee Dee,
Eric said, which he hadn't called her in a decade or more.
Dee Dee, come with us.
Back home after everything settled a little, after a muted dinner of freezer-scorched pizza, Drew collapsed into his bed and Devin disappeared into the basement gym again. As Eric drank whiskey from a coffee cup, Katie stood over the sink, scraping all the rice stuck to the bottom of yesterday's casserole dish, drinking beer from a can. All she wanted was for everything to stay quiet, to be quiet, and to keep Eric away from Devin. He still looked so on edge, a coiled thing.
"Can you go to the drugstore?"
she asked him. "Some vitamin E oil for Devin's wrist?" He said he would. She hoped to talk to Devin alone, quietly, and make sure she was really okay. But before she could, everything started up again.
Katie,
Teddy said, one foot on the doorstep. Polo shirt untucked, neck rubbed red, eyes pouched, he stood before her, one hand tugging nervously at the fingers of the other. She was guessing he'd been up for a long time, days maybe. Under the porch light, though, there was still that magnificent silver hair like druzy quartz. And his voice.
Oh, God, Katie.
Hurrying him inside, she shut the door to the den behind them.
You absolutely cannot be here, Teddy. Eric's at the drugstore, but he'll be back. You know how he can be, and this...
I can't explain what she did, Katie. I won't even try, he said. But I need you to know we're taking care of it.
He explained that he had checked Haley into Gateway's behavioral health.
The only way to keep the hospital from putting her in the psych ward after she'd tried to climb out of her bathroom window.
It's this lying bullshit I witnessed. It unwound her. And he can't keep his story straight. First he says Altima, but cops show him pictures and he IDs a Chevy Malibu. And he's a trucker.
I don't care, Teddy. I don't care about this. What does it have to do with what she did to my daughter?
Shaking his head.
All of this, it's eating her alive. It's made her do shameful things. I just ask that you try to understand that that wasn't our Haley there today.
Katie kept her eyes on the front window for Eric's return.
Katie, when she first came to us, Haley was headed down a crooked road. Boy trouble, lots of volatility. We got her to church, got her on the swim team, didn't give up on her,
he said, voice cracking with urgency, his fist pounding his knee.
By 16, she was prom queen and junior class president.
Teddy, I know this.
And I thought, he said. Well, I thought, we've sealed that up, that's done.
Teddy covered his face with both hands and was silent for a moment. But when he lifted his head again, his eyes were dry and filled with surprise.
I mean, I thought this was what I was good at, making girls feel loved.
In spite of herself, Katie felt her throat tighten. And there it was, Eric's weather-beaten silver Ford, lights flashing up the window. Teddy, you have to go, now. He nodded firmly, squeezing his bloodshot eyes. Nodded again, but he didn't get up.
But Katie, I do need to tell you. At the hospital, Haley wasn't making any sense. She was talking about how the fight started. She started saying some kind of raw things about... I mean, you must be wondering, too.
You bet we're wondering, Teddy. We've known Haley for years. We...
I mean, about Devin. She had some things to say about Devin. About Ryan. Some stuff that kind of rocked me back on my feet.
What?
Well,
he said, shifting uncomfortably.
You know how young women can be.
Then the side door slammed and Katie jumped up.
What the hell are you doing here?
It was Eric, standing in the doorway, keys still in hand, eyes bleared.
What did you say?
He demanded, and Teddy rose.
Eric, he just...
Katie, don't you talk to him.
Katie looked at Eric. Something in his eyes she had never seen before.
Teddy, you need to leave. You just do.
Briskly, she walked Teddy outside, afraid Eric might follow. Teddy, what did Haley say? She asked. What did she tell you?
Listen, it doesn't matter, he said. Let's just wait. Let everything calm a little.
Then you better go. They both stood a moment on the front lawn, jungly with ground ivy.
Katie, listen, you know Haley,
he began, voice trembling.
You know her heart. You always understood her.
I don't know her heart, Katie said coolly. She came after my daughter. What would that do to you? Teddy nodded, kicking the curb at the foot of the drive just like a little boy might.
I'd be the same way. I'd be like Eric. I'd be worse. You know I love your daughter.
Katie folded her arms, glancing back at the house. Eric's shadow in the front window.
I'm tired and life's a son of a bitch,
Teddy said, looking off into the distance. The neon banded lights from the corner drive-thru, cars chugging into the lot all night, thumping bass, the drunken chirs of girls.
We never know,
he said.
None of us. What love'll do to us?
He smiled a little.
Make us buy a swimming pool. just so a niece might keep coming by.
Katie felt something inside herself open, her face red-rushed with shame over it. It felt like he had poked a hole in her.
Or maybe we do know,
he said, walking backward down the front walkway, the deep slope of the unmowed lawn.
What was he thinking, showing up here?
Eric kept saying over and over and over, pacing in the living room. He shouldn't have come.
After what she did to our daughter.
I know.
And you,
he said, freshly outraged at the thought.
What she did to you.
It was the first time Eric mentioned it. Katie looked down at the spindle scratch on her arm, felt the pulse over her brow where, she guessed, Haley's hard knuckle, or was it Devon's accidentally, had pushed. No one ever wants to believe bad things about their own family, Katie said. He was standing by the front doorway, and those car keys still in his hand, like he was going to leave. For a second, she wondered if he would.
How did it happen?
He asked, as if to himself.
How did this happen?
She wasn't even sure what he meant, but there was something in his face. She'd seen it before, years ago, during the pureed pear-smeared chaos of new parenthood. This dangerous and endangered creature had landed like a bomb in their lives, his life, and he'd stand at the nursery door at the end of a long day, and she couldn't get him to come inside, to join her at the rocker, or he'd stand over the crib rail, his face stiff and eyes distracted. He'd linger in the doorway.
I don't want to wake her.
But Devon was always awake, bantam arms swatting at Katie's chest. Come on, Eric, Katie would urge. Hold her. Smell that sweet smell. But it was as though he were frozen there, and he never moved at all. But that was a long time ago, before everything. That night, tucking Drew in, feeling his forehead, she tried to explain what had happened, that Haley was upset and had been mean to Devon.
Oh, I thought Devon did something wrong, Drew said, his throat clacking wetly. I thought she was in trouble.
No, she said, worried about the rash, his skin mottled looking. She was going to call the doctor in the morning.
Sleep smug, okay? She looked like she looked when she drove the car that time.
Honey, you were dreaming, remember? Just like when you thought she was flying.
But she can, he said. She can fly, Mom.
You poor Tucker. Call me if you need more throat spray.
It makes my mouth feel like a seashell, he said. Like something died inside and took all the feeling away.
On the way back, she stopped at Devon's room, peeking behind the nearly closed door. It was black inside and loud with a warm, wet wind from the open window. Devon lay there, still and helpless, one arm dangling off the bed. Katie stood a moment, listening to the wind, watching it rush over her daughter's body so motionless. Her hand, palm facing out, caught the hallway light. The funny stigmata the gymnastics rips had formed in its center.
I'm sorry,
came the whisper, and now she saw Devon's eyes shimmering in the heavy dark.
Sorry for what, baby? Mom, what if it's all my fault?
No, Katie said, stepping inside. Nothing is your fault. She sat down on the edge of her bed, feeling Devon's body stiffen, nearly cracking. She rested her hand on Devon's ankle, hot and heavy. Devon looked at her closely, tilting her head like a cat.
Was Coach T here?
Yes, Katie said, not taking her eyes off her.
What did he want?
Devon asked, more awake now, body tensing.
Did he want to talk to me?
Katie paused.
Devon, do you know why Haley did this to you?
Devon said nothing. Katie waited. There was something happening. She knew it. She let the silence linger and kept her gaze fixed on Devon. Devon held that gaze for a long minute.
Maybe she thinks I'll tell.
Tell what? Katie asked, a creeping feeling on her neck, like a pin scratching. It was like opening a diary, Devon's diary, except Devon was doing it, inviting her in. Katie had always thought her daughter never confided because she had nothing to confide. It started a few weeks ago, she said. It was a Saturday practice amid the sweat and chalk fog of the gym. Only a few parents were staggered through the stands, not even Katie, who was at swim class with Drew. Devin looked up in the stands and saw Ryan. Usually if he visited, which was almost never anymore, he stayed close to Haley's part of the gym, where she reigned over the 7-year-olds, belly bands cinched around their soft centers. But today he was sitting on Devin's side with a perfect view of the vault. She focused on her routines. Round-offs to the board, drills onto stacked mats and onto the trapezoid, and especially Yurchenko's into the pit. Gaze trained on the sloping tongue of the vault table. The place she needed her hands to hit, fingers straight ahead, telling herself, don't slip off the tongue. But at a certain point, she noticed Haley had abandoned her 7-year-olds to a round-off drill and strolled over to watch her. After Devin's last run, Haley approached her at the chalk stand. Devin, Ryan thinks your vault is mind-blowing, she said, smiling but in a weird way, and the way she said mind-blowing, like it was a dirty word. Later, Devin saw the two of them in the Bellstars parking lot, leaning against Haley's Altima and talking very closely. Walking past, she thought she heard Haley say, "Is that how you like them now?" Her voice peculiar. "Like little boys?" Like that one time when Haley couldn't get Ryan on the phone and said to Lacey Weaver, "Your mom would tell me, right? If Ryan was screwing that hostess? The one who shakes her tits at him?" "Mom," Devin said, "that's how she talks when no adults are around. She's so nasty." Then Ryan came to practice again. He stopped her at the vending machine. He said he was sorry if Haley had made her uncomfortable, but not to worry about it. It was Haley's way. "She's always been jealous as a cat," he'd said with a shrug. But that made Devin worry about it more, and something about the way Haley had started looking at her, watching her on the beam, even in the locker room. Then, last Friday, she was running, shin splints aching, in Hood Park, just off Ash Road, and Ryan spotted her, gave her a ride home. That night, she got the first text. "I know what's up. I know you were with him last night. I could smell your disgusting wrist grips in the car." And then more came, and they got nastier. "Gym bitch. Nasty whore. You'll get yours." "Mom," Devin said, "I never answered any of them. I stopped reading them. I've heard things about Haley. How she'd beaten up girls. Crazy stuff." The next night, Saturday, she was at Lacey's birthday party when Haley called. At first she was really nice, like the before Haley. The one who brought her famous Funfetti cupcakes on birthdays and stuck them out for secret frozen yogurt runs in her little purple car. She said that she was sorry about any bad feeling between them and wanted to explain in person and would Devin consider meeting up to talk. But the more she spoke, the stranger Haley sounded. Her words seemed to stretch out and then speed up, and her mouth seemed too close to the phone. It gave Devin a bad feeling. And she said she couldn't see her. She didn't even have a way to get there. Something told her not to go. It felt like a trap. But then Haley said, "It's because you're seeing him tonight, isn't it? He goes to you after me, doesn't he? He puts his hands on you and your little boy body. Do you even have tits? Do you even have pubic hair? That's how he likes them. Freaks with a freak foot." Devin hung up. But all night, Haley's voice kept needling her brain. It was like in a horror movie when a person you are very close to, like one of your family, changes. A vampire. A zombie. Voice dropping low. Eyes murderous. Like how Grandma was that time, right after they started the dementia meds. "You're as dark as your dad," she'd whispered, as Devin leaned over to hug her powdery bones. "You're trying to murder me."
And then the next day, we all heard about Ryan. The accident, Devin said to Katie now, grabbing for her pillow, twisting it. And the call started, and more texts. So Dad said to block her.
Katie looked at her, trying to unravel it all. Her daughter snared in such big drama. A seamy love triangle with an unhinged young woman, and Katie never knew it. Freaks with a freak foot.
It was too awful.
Then today, Devon said, sitting up to face Katie. Mom, she must have been hiding in the locker room. She must have been waiting for me behind one of the shower stalls. If you hadn't come...
There was a pause, Devon's chin shaking slightly.
Oh, Mom,
she finally said, turning her face away.
The way she looked. Mom, she wanted to kill me.
It was a thing you never expected to hear from your child. They had a long moment where Katie wrapped her arm tightly around Devon's hard, hewn shoulders, and neither said anything.
What happens now?
Your dad and I will take care of it. She will never get near you again.
Should I have told the police?
Devon asked. Katie looked at her, the snarl of panic over her eye. We'll figure it out.
I didn't want to tell,
Devon said.
I mean, that's Coach T's niece, you know?
Oh, Devon, Katie said, feeling a rush of heat under her eyes. That's very generous of you, after everything. Sometimes in the blur and burr of Devon's extraordinary upbringing, she worried about how Devon would ever learn people skills, social skills, empathy, even. But here it was, Devon thinking foremost of her beloved coach. Always thinking of the burdens of parents and parent figures everywhere. But, Katie said, taking a breath, if anything goes further, we might have to talk to the police about it. This might be evidence. Evidence, the word heavy on her tongue. But Devon just bit at her thumbnail like she did before a floor routine. She'd learned long ago how to beat down her fear.
Are you mad at me, Mom?
No, she said. No, Devon. None of this is your fault. Devon looked at her, big-eyed and immaculate, thumbnails still between her teeth, looking for all the world like Devon at age 8, or like Devon at age 13, still carrying that plush tiger in her travel bag, sleeping with it between her legs.
Mom,
she said, pressing her face against Katie's shoulder.
I'm really glad we talked.
It was a full embrace like Devon hadn't offered in years. Not since 4-year-old Drew had poured milk in her fish tank and killed her angelfish. Not since she'd left her first gym for Bellstars.
But, Mom,
she whispered, her head ducked down toward Katie's chest.
Don't tell Dad.
What? Why not?
Because it's private,
she said, voice soft, plaintive.
It's girl stuff. Stuff you share with your mom.
Devon, I...
And because,
Devon added, breathing in long and hard.
He gets so mad. Sometimes he gets so mad.
He just wants to protect you, Katie said, feeling something churning inside.
Yeah,
Devon said, eyes black, chewing on that nail again.
I know.
In bed later, everything batting around in her brain, she decided she wouldn't tell Eric. Not yet, at least. Besides, it was something Devon had shared with her. Mothers and daughters shared things. Part 3. There is something bad here, growing. Day and night, I watch it. Growing. Sophocles. Electra. Chapter 12. Oh my God, baby! Marbled red, Drew's skin felt like sandpaper under her hands.
It doesn't hurt, he said, but it feels weird.
Pulling off his pajama top, she found dark red lines on his underarms, his elbows, any crease in his soft little body. Behind her, Eric was already on the phone with Dr. Kemper, his voice shaking and sleep thick.
He's just... It's like someone took a paintbrush to him. What the hell did you dose him with?
I'll take him, she said, Drew's skin bright white under the pressure of her fingertips. You stay with Devon. For 20 minutes she sat with Drew in the car, the parking lot nearly empty, slicked clean from all the rain the night before.
The knocks I barely see,
Dr. Kemper winked at Drew as he unlocked the front door.
You finally figured out how to get my attention.
One look at Drew's face under the exam room's fluorescent lights was all he needed.
Don't worry, he warned Katie. It sounds much worse than it is.
The only person she'd ever heard of getting it was Beth March in Little Women. As they hurried through the waiting room, Eric called.
Honey,
she whispered into the phone. A bleary, streak-nosed kid and his wan parents were staring at dappled Drew, his face like raw bacon.
It's scarlet fever, she said, covering her mouth with her hand. It's fine, but Drew has scarlet fever.
Both parents looked up, alarmed, the mother clutching her son closer to her chest.
Christ, Eric said. Isn't that from the Civil War?
It can come with strep. The strep releases a toxin.
How could he get it when he's already on antibiotics? I always knew that guy was a quack. Teddy's doctor. All he knows are cortisone shots and horse pills.
Who else do you know who sees patients on Sundays?
Katie said, her voice low as she could make it.
He says it does happen. He increased the dosage, and he says in 24 hours the fever will go away and the rash will just...
Let me talk to him.
That sharp rap again.
He's with another patient, and Eric, you need to...
I mean Drew, he said more softly now. Can I talk to my son?
Katie said nothing, handing the phone to Drew.
Dad, he chirped. It's like in The Velveteen Rabbit. Remember how they had to burn all the toys?
Katie rested her hand on the top of his head, trying to breathe. Devin was standing on the front lawn, gym bag in hand, when Katie pulled up the drive.
I'm going to the Y, she said. I'll work the weights.
You will not, Katie said, jumping out of the car. You're not going anywhere after what happened yesterday.
Dad said he'd take me,
she said, backing away from Drew, even from Katie.
Mom, I need to.
She wouldn't even step into the garage or look at her brother.
We'll just do a few hours practice,
Eric said, pulling the covers over Drew, who slumped into face-squashing sleep in seconds.
I'll be with her the whole time.
Go,
just go,
Katie said, not even looking at him.
Both of you, go.
After, I'll take her to lunch. I'll explain.
Katie was listening, but she wasn't. Drew's eyes fluttered like when he was a baby. The rest of the morning, taking care of Drew, scrubbing everything with bleach until her hands cracked, she had the feeling things were happening, but no one was calling her back. No one seemed to be anywhere they should be. Another load of laundry, the weight of the final basket branding her forearms, she fell asleep in the mama-san chair she dragged into Drew's room to watch him. She was dreaming when a sound woke her, dreaming of her hands digging into Haley's thick hair from behind and pulling it back, to see Devin hunched beneath, teeth barred and pink, her feet like little claws. Her eyes opened to Drew, sitting bolt straight in bed, mouth open, a flash of crimson that looked like a flame.
Someone's here, he lisped. Someone with noisy shoes.
Katie leaned over and looked out the window. In the driveway, a familiar car gleamed like an oyster. Reaching the bottom stair, laundry bag still in hand, she stopped in the foyer and took a breath. There was Gwen, lodged firmly in the wing chair in the living room. It was the only fine piece of furniture they'd ever owned, a family heirloom presented with tears and ceremony by Eric's mother for their 10th anniversary. Katie could remember sitting on it only once. Or she and Eric had together, the herringbone beneath her palm as she pushed hotly against his chest. A seized moment, Devin away at regionals, news of her triumph freshly arrived. The knife pleat skirt tickling her swinging ankle. The skidding sound of its ball and claw feet on the floor. Claw away, claw up the floor, mark it. And there Gwen sat. Tangerine sheath dress, just a shade too tight across her midriff. Those tanned piston arms of hers bare because she was always warm. I run a few degrees shy of Hades, she told everyone all the time. Always have. Fingers tapping on her phone. And now, scraping along the wall to wall, were those noisy shoes. Pointy, soaring, python-skinned like they'd hiss. Look who woke up. I ran into Eric and Devin at Pancake Palace. They're upstairs.
Thanks,
Katie said, looking at her watch. They'd been gone for 4 hours.
What can I do for you, Gwen?
It's really unbelievable, isn't it? Thank God that demented girl is under lock and key.
Yes, Katie said, trying to smooth her sleep-rumpled hair, trying to shove the detergent-speckled laundry bag behind her.
For now. You should have seen Devon at practice yesterday, Katie.
Her eyes shone, python heels rasping on the carpet beneath her.
Amplitude. Perfect body alignment and the prettiest toe point I've ever seen. But listen, Katie, that double twist your Chanko is not what it was 2 weeks ago. The stress of this is telling on her.
Worry about your own daughter, Katie said, her eyes catching sight of Gwen's car, the top of Lacey's buttercup head inside,
who's apparently imprisoned in your car like an overheated collie.
Gwen sighed.
We got in some extra practice time today. She keeps saying to me, Mom, I love gymnastics, but I tell her just because you love it doesn't mean you'll be good at it. There's a whole gym out there of girls who love it and are useless at it.
But why is she in the car, Gwen?
It's hard enough to get her to practice without dosing her with scarlet fever, too. And circling back, Katie, to your question about why I'm here, I thought I'd extend the invitation to have Devon stay at my house a few nights until the quarantine has passed.
There's no quarantine. He's on antibiotics. He'll be fine.
Katie, I know I'm prone to hyperbole, or so my ex-husband said while he was raping me in the divorce proceedings. But really, who gets scarlet fever these days? Between whatever criminal derangement has overtaken Haley and the pestilence under your own roof? Well, it's getting pretty Greek here, isn't it?
Katie took a long, long breath.
I wish I had your balls, she once overheard a bourbon-brewed Jim Chu say to Gwen at a booster party, shooting pool.
Gwen had smiled, rolling the eight ball between her fingers. I appreciate your concern, Katie said, lifting the laundry bag, trying to signal an end to things. But I'm not letting Devon out of my sight again.
Of course, Gwen said, rising. It's a mother's decision. Eric thought it was a good idea, but what do fathers know?
You two already talked about it?
Katie felt the bag slide off her narrow, toneless shoulder and catch in the cradle of her bent arm. He said he'd have to talk to you, but he's up there now helping her pack. Feet pounding up the stairs, laundry sacks swinging wildly from her forearm, Katie called out both their names.
What's going on in here? She asked, pushing open the door to Devon's room.
Both of them, backs to her, were leaning over Devon's duffel bag.
When they turned around, their faces seemed to blur before her eyes, same deep-set eyes, same hewn cheekbones, the same grave expressions.
Mom, Devon said, hand out as if to calm her. I need to go. Mrs. Weaver said the bacteria lives for up to 8 days, maybe longer. She called a specialist.
Not with antibiotics, Katie said, voice cresting. She knew Gwen could hear her. Everyone could.
You are staying in this house with your parents and your sick brother. Have you even ducked your head in there? Have you even asked him how he is?
But, Mom,
Devon said, her hands shaking slightly, her fingers wrapping around her wrists, like just before a vault run.
Dad set it all up. It's the right thing.
Katie looked at Eric, who didn't say a word. Their bedroom door shut, Eric began talking quietly, fervently, about how Gwen would escort Devon to and from practice with Lacey, and that not only was the Weaver house germ-free, it had a full workout room with a beam, a bar trainer, even a vault table. Devon could practice around the clock if she wanted, see? Gwen could take care of Devon, and they could take care of Drew.
It's not just about Devon, he added husky-voiced. It could spread through the whole squad, all those girls who are counting on doing their best next month. And it's only for a few days.
We need her here, Eric, she said. You didn't see it. You didn't see her on the floor of that locker room.
Gwen's house has a security system. It's wired for everything. Fire, carbon monoxide. It can tell if someone opens the medicine cabinet.
I don't give a goddamn if it's landmine trapped from basement to roof, Eric. She belongs with her family. She belongs with her mom and dad.
Her voice sounded high and childlike. Once in the grocery store, piling the cart with energy bars and string cheese and a tilting stack of frozen dinners, a woman came inside and said,
"Whoever owns the blue Ford, you shouldn't leave your child in the car like that."
And she'd forgotten Drew. 6 months old and strapped in the car seat for close to a half hour, and Katie crying the whole way home and so tired. She snapped the wheel too hard on the final turn, hit a guardrail.
What will Eric say? What will he say?
But he'd said nothing. And then the fear spinning.